namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 28, Jnana Yoga, text number 5. Jaya Pratya Vaya Bhasa Yasanto Pyarta Karinaha Evam deha dayo bhava.
Evam deha dayo bhava.
Yatschantya mrityuto bhayam.
Chaya pratya vaya bhasa.
Yasanto pyartakarinaha.
Evam deha dayo bhava.
Evam deha dayo bhava.
Yatschantya mrityuto bhayam.
Yatschantya mrityuto bhayam.
Chaya.
Shadows.
Pratyavaya.
Pratyavaya.
Echoes.
Abhasaha.
And false appearances.
And false appearances.
He.
Indeed.
Asantaha.
Asantaha.
Non-existent.
Non-existent.
Api.
Api.
Although.
Although.
Artha.
Artha.
Ideas.
Ideas.
Karinaha.
Karinaha.
Creating.
Creating.
Evam.
Evam.
In the same way.
In the same way.
Deha.
Deha.
Adayaha.
Adayaha.
The body.
The body.
And so on.
And so on.
Bhavaha.
Bhavaha.
Material conceptions.
Material conceptions.
Yatschanti.
Yatschanti.
They give.
They give.
Amrityutaha.
Amrityutaha.
Up to the point of death.
Up to the point of death.
Bhayam.
Bhayam.
Fear.
Yeah.
Although shadows, echoes, and mirages are only illusory reflections of real things, such reflections do cause a semblance of meaningful or comprehensible perception. In the same way, although the identification of the conditioned soul with the material body, mind, and ego is illusory, this identification generates fear within him, even up to the moment of death. Purport. Although shadows, echoes, and mirages are mere reflections of real substances, they create strong emotions in persons falsely accepting them as real. In the same manner, a conditioned soul is seized by such emotions as fear, lust, anger, and hope, because of his illusory perception of himself as the material body, mind, and false ego. By practical example, it is thus shown that even illusory objects may cause highly emotional reactions. Ultimately, our emotions should be absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternal truth. Fear is forever vanquished when one takes shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. One can then enjoy the pure emotions of liberated life. Om Jnana Dimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadaha Mahayam Tadatte Svapadam Tikam Muktam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripa Timaran Yat Kripa Was it Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam?
Bit of a sore throat today, but anyway. Srila Prabhupada says that fear arises from worrying about the future. Worrying too much about the future. Fear arises from contemplation of the unknown. Contemplation of the unknown, worrying about the future. Especially for those who are in a bodily concept of life, because we accept something as real and permanent, which is not. As Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, the material body has a beginning and has an end. And so it's part of the temporal world, not to be accepted as permanent. But it's all we've got. And especially the fear of, or the reality of death, and the inconclusiveness of where we will go and what will happen at the time of death is a cause of great concern for one who accepts the body as something permanent or something real. And here in this description, Krishna, I assume it's Krishna speaking here. I actually haven't looked. Yeah, Krishna's explaining. He's given another example in a previous verse, which is similar to this. These examples of shadows, echoes, and mirages, and that's the example Prabhupada would give it very often. The example of a person sleeping. You know, we go to sleep, and in our sleeping state, we become absorbed in our dreams. So much so that our dreams are totally, they are the reality, they are the existence that we experience, and we become completely absorbed in them, emotionally absorbed in them. You know, sometimes you can wake from a dream and have had such a compelling experience that you still feel the events as if they just happened, especially after you've just woken up. Yesterday morning I woke up. I was dreaming I was travelling with Indrajit Maharaj, and I was worrying about how I was going to manage the drying of my clothes, you know, the washing and the drying of my clothes. Something that I've been experiencing a lot of recently, because I've been travelling backwards and forwards between Melbourne and Adelaide, and having to manage my mum manages my washing for me when I'm at home in Adelaide. We still have to worry about these things. So I woke up thinking, As I woke up thinking about Indrajit Maharaj in Brazil and how he's very often in a different place, almost, you know, every week, or sometimes even in a matter of days, in a completely new place with a whole new set of arrangements and situations. I was discussing this also with Chandrasekhar as well the other day about travelling and being in a different place all the time. But it was just a dream. Exactly, it was just a dream. It didn't happen. But I was completely absorbed in that meditation. So the living entity is described as being much like somebody who's asleep and absorbed in a dream. Only we have our night dreams, but we also have our daydreams. And so, you know, we wake up, but even though we appear to be awake, we're still in an unreal situation. So in that sense, it is also like a dream. And here there are a number of other examples. Shadows. You know, the shadow appears to be real. You know, you can shape your hand into, or in Indonesia they have shadow puppets, and they can actually create a whole pantomime, if you like, a whole drama, simply using light and shadow, stick. You know, they move them around with sticks. They have music. They have narration, and then they put on I think they put on performances of the Mahabharata and the Ramayana.
One action.
Yes, and you can become completely absorbed in that performance. Yet all it is light and shadow. It's not real, in one sense, but in the performance, the whole mood, the whole message of actually Prabhupada mentions, you know, that Krishna consciousness can be spread through cultural conquest. So, you know, in Indonesia they use these shadow puppets to tell stories. And even though it's just shadows, because of the way it's presented, the experience becomes all-absorbing. And, of course, in that all-absorbing environment, you can then educate and teach people and get, as is mentioned here in the purport, a very strong emotional response just from shadows. And of course the shadow moves according to the according to the movement of the hand, or according to the movement of the puppet master, if you like. It's just shadows, but it still has an impact. Echoes also. An echo is not the real thing, but a reflection, if you like. And so it has its potency also. You know, there's the story of the cowherd boys would play with echoes. They'd call out to the echo, "Shut up." They'd call back, "Shut up." In fact, you know, when you go on parikrama around Vrindavan, I don't know if it's still there, at the end of the parikrama path, there's a well, right? And I was told by Mother Jagatarini, you know, you go to the well and you call out Radhe Shyam, and then how clearly the echo comes back, that's how good your parikrama was. You heard that? Experienced it? Yeah. So, you know, you walk around them. It's just before the end of the parikrama marg on the Bhaktivedanta Swami marg. It's about maybe 100 metres on the right-hand side. I don't know if it's still there because I stopped going on the Vrindavan parikrama because it's now, you know, it's all concrete and bitumen and it's not like it used to be. You used to be able to go out around the other side of Vrindavan from Krishna Balaram Mandi and it was all just sandy paths. And they were those Shiva Babas who used to be on the corner there. It was very nice, very pleasant meditation. These days it's a concrete jungle out there. So it's lost the mood. somewhat. But again, you know, you call out into the well and then your voice comes back. Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam. And of course, a mirage is another example that Prabhupada uses a lot. Especially you see it in the outback in Australia when you're driving down a long country road and you see in the distance in the sun. You'll see as it looks as if there's water on the road. But of course, it's just a mirage. So these things, even though they're a reflection, they're not actually the real thing. Still, they have an emotive response. So they have their power, especially when they're falsely accepted as being real. So the same situation for the conditioned soul. You know, you can also see it in the reflection in a mirror. When you look in the mirror, everything appears to be real. No? But if you try to have a relationship with the objects in the mirror, it's just a cold, flat piece of nothing, really. It's actually illusory. You know, when you go, you don't see it so much, but in most of the department stores that I used to visit when I was a kid, they used to have the magic mirrors. And so you walk in front of one mirror and it makes you look like you're really fat. And you walk in front of another mirror and it makes you look really skinny. You walk in front of another mirror and it makes you look like you're really short. Then you walk in front of another mirror and it makes you look like you're really tall. And then in another mirror, and you go like this. and it has a, you know, you go there. Actually, I think it was designed to keep children entertained so the parents can go and do the shopping and spend money, basically. A very old fashioned marketing technique. Living entities. Like that, according to the way the modes of material nature have combined under the influence of the false ego, which is where we connect with the material energy, based on our desire to enjoy the material energy separately from Krishna, then we accept this material body, and along with it then these emotional responses that come about. Automatically they come about, and they're basically a reaction to this acceptance of material existence. And with the acceptance of material existence comes this very strong emotional response. Which generates this emotional response of fear. The fear of the unknown. Worrying about the future. Basically, which comes from accepting for a devotee. I mean, and this really then underlines our very, very basic philosophy, the very, very basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, the first instructions that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita is that you're not the body. So, you know, we don't have to worry about the future. Because what's the future for a devotee? What's the future for a devotee? What's our future? Who can say? more service. Yeah.
Same as the past, the eternal.
Same as the past. Yeah, quite. Yeah.
Progress version of the original life.
What's that?
Progress version of
the original life. We're going to go back home, back to Godhead. That's the that's the future for a devotee. We go back home, back to Godhead. So long as we follow the process of devotional service, then that's our future. So there's no need to worry about the future in one sense. We know in the material world there's going to be the comings and goings of material existence. What is it? Nasato vijate bhavo na bhavo vijate sataha. Of the impermanent, there is no endurance. Right? So of material existence, there's no endurance. It's always going to change. It's always going to basically... It dies eventually. And of the eternal, there is no cessation. So for the spirit soul, there's no death. So we don't have to worry about death, because we don't die. It's just the changing of bodies. And of course, Krishna gives the example. It's like, you know, when you get up in the morning, you change your shirt and put on a fresh set of clothes. Well, I hope you put on a fresh set of clothes. That's generally recommended. Huh? Then when you go to bed at night, you put on your pajamas. And you get up in the morning, you put on a set of clothes. So the for the devotee, we know there will be a change of body at some point in time. But a devotee's not worried about that change because he knows that ultimately Krishna will protect. One then has to be prepared then to get Krishna's protection. Right? One has to then be prepared that Krishna will protect them. Who here is accepting that Krishna is protecting them? Oh, good. I hope it should be all of us. Right? You know, it's interesting if we ask the devotees, I've been meditating on this, I mentioned it to Thomas Agar the other day. If you ask the devotees, who wants to be Krishna conscious, and everybody put their hands up. Right? But then if you ask them, who wants to follow the process, then you say, that's when you get the reluctance. Oh, maybe. Who wants to follow the process of surrender? But it's important. It's interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one who follows the process of surrender, then Krishna hears that devotees' prayers. Lord Chaitanya appeared specifically for a purpose, and his purpose is to teach us the process of surrender. That's why he appeared, to teach everybody how their activities, when performed with the right mood, then when they leave this body, they will automatically be going back home, back to Godhead. Whether they're super duper big advanced devotee or just a little devotee, it doesn't matter actually. Anybody who follows the process of surrender to Krishna will be protected by Krishna. And of course, Krishna says, Desham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam jena mamma piyantite. Tesham evanukam paratam mahamma jnana jam tamaha nasyam yatma bhavasto jnana deepena bhasvata. Krishna says, He'll give us the understanding by which we can come to Him so long as we're constantly engaged in devotional service. And it doesn't really matter who we are, what we're doing, so long as we're following that process, Krishna will reciprocate out of compassion for them. Krishna is situated within the hearts of, within the heart of everyone. And when he sees that constant endeavor of the devotee, then he reciprocates by giving himself, basically, by removing the ignorance. So when we become Krishna conscious, then automatically this fear is removed. Because we don't have to, there's no need to worry about the future. You know, we'll be engaging in devotional service now and we'll continue engaging in devotional service in the future. And there may be some difficulties. Not maybe, there will be. That's, the material world is designed in such a way so that there will be difficulties. Right? We shouldn't think that, oh, now I'm a devotee and all problems will stop. No. One has to tolerate. Sukha dukkha samay kritva. Labha labo jaya jayo. Isn't it? We have to be equipoised. One of the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, basically, to be, you know, a very consistent theme all the way through the Bhagavad Gita is material world stinks and we have to tolerate it. At least for this lifetime. That's the message, basically. And that's part of, you know, so long as we, it's a deal, right? So long as we accept existence in the material world, then have a guess what comes along with it. The threefold sufferings. Right? They just come, that's part of the arrangement. You stay in the material world, okay, you have to suffer. That's just how it works. Right? And this dying is part of it. As Prabhupada says, it doesn't matter how many plans you make. It's built into the contract. You cannot get around it. So that's why the fear is always there. What's that verse? For those... those who have no legs... No, what is it? No. Those who have no hands are food for those who have got hands, right? Do you know the Sanskrit for that? I was looking at it yesterday trying to remember it. Apadani Chatup. No, is it? I can't remember it. Anyway, for those who don't have hands, they're food for those who do. And for those who don't have legs, they're food for the four-legged. And the general rule is that one living entity is food for another. That's the rule. That's the rule. So that means that you're going to be eaten. I was chanting japa in my bedroom the other day and I heard this pack, 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 pack on my window. And I thought, what's that? And there was one of those Indian minor birds. And he could see a fly on the inside of my window, but he didn't realise that the glass was there. He was trying to get at the fly. Of course, the fly's frantically buzzing around trying to get out, thinking he's going to get eaten by the minor bird. But it's a rule for everybody, even for us. Eventually, this body will be consumed by the time factor. And the agents of the time factor, you know, will be the fire for most of us. Or if we're in an unfortunate situation, the dogs. That probably doesn't happen in this country so much. But the time factor will consume us and then we'll become food for the funeral pyre or food for the worms. So that's why there's fear. What's going to happen to me? I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. But death is sure, as Prabhupada says. Death is sure. We have to accept that as a fact. And the way to conquer death is to follow the process of surrender. And actually, it's explained. The process of surrender is explained by Sanatana Goswami in the Hari Bhakti Vilas.
And there are different versions, depending on, because there's another version given by Rupa Goswami and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as well. So there are different combinations. And again, Bhakti Vinod Thakur in his song Sharanagati, he orders them differently. The first item that's recommended by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sharanagati, the first item is dānya, or humility. And then the second item is atmanikshepa, or atmanivedana, to be a surrendered soul, to be surrendered to whatever Krishna wants. Then gopritve varanam tata, which means to always accept Krishna as one's protector. Rakshishatiti visvaso, that's to be protector. To accept Krishna as one's maintainer. They're somewhat similar. But to accept Krishna as your maintainer and Krishna as your protector, somewhat similar, but slightly different. There's a subtle difference in the two. So strong dependence, and this is characteristic of advancement. Actually, these items of surrender, cultivating these items of surrender. If we can concentrate on cultivating the items of surrender, then automatically the symptoms of advancement will manifest. Not that we're necessarily looking for advancement as an emblem that we walk around with, showing off. But we should be concerned about whether we're making advancement or not, because as we become dependent upon Krishna and more absorbed in Krishna, then the material problems will dissipate, will go away. And so faith, strong faith that Krishna will protect me and Krishna will maintain me, are the symptoms. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if we have that faith, then Krishna hears the prayers of those devotees who follow the process of devotional service. And then the other two items, to accept that which is favourable. And this is a good part of our devotional service, is to, especially for those who are starting the process of devotional service, and even if one's very advanced, one still follows this process, these two items. To accept that which is favourable and to reject that which is unfavourable. So to follow the basic rules and regulations of devotional service and to avoid those things which are unsuitable or unsupportive of devotional service, very important. For one who's on the beginning stage, and the beginning stage means basically sadhana bhakti, which means following the rules and regulations of devotional service, and being active, right? Devotional service, Rupa Goswami explains, and Srila Prabhupada elucidates, is activity. Devotional service is not some speculative affair. It's not something that we can imagine or create for ourselves, but rather it has already been elucidated, it's already been clarified, it's already been described for us. And our engagement in devotional service is monitored or regulated by the basic principles. The 64 items of devotional service that Rupa Goswami gives in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So accepting that which is favourable and rejecting that which is unfavourable is encompassed within these principles. And the devotees, the sadhus,
And our gurus, our siksha gurus, teach us how to apply the principles of devotional service so that we're making progress on the path of surrender, following these six items of devotional service. And then, as one advances, then one comes to the stage of raga, bhakti. And there's devotional service in practice. It's divided up into two sections. Devotional service, which is done out of obligation or out of a sense of duty. And then there's raga, which is where we become more spontaneous in our service. And so we're not thinking, oh God, I've got to get up and go to the temple and do my service. One spontaneously gets up and does it with some enthusiasm. One feels some affection, some emotion for Krishna. Of course, Prabhupada says that one shouldn't jump immediately to the crying stage. Right? Prabhupada says, you cry, and then you cry for Krishna, and then your throat feels dry, and so you want to have a cigarette. Prabhupada's had experience of these things. So there is a process. It's how to get Krishna's shelter, how to get Krishna's protection. We learn how to depend on Krishna. We learn how to seek Krishna's protection. We accept that which is favourable, reject that which is unfavourable. We cultivate the mood of humility. It's also described, Dainya is also characterized by, it's translated as poverty, being poverty stricken. And we were discussing at Krishna Fest the other day, what is the quality of humility, that not desiring to be praised or recognized by others. So it's interesting in the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, I am a soul surrendered unto you. But initially his presentation is, I am fallen. I have come to the material world to enjoy, and what is my tale? A tale of suffering and woe. All of my attempts to enjoy in the material world are just now history. Failed attempts. So that humility is to present oneself realistically. Not, I'm a big devotee, now please give me your shelter. That humility is important. And then of course being prepared to surrender. That in itself is a challenge. When we're young devotees, we're going to go back to Godhead, become a pure devotee this week. And for all intents and purposes, yes. But as one progresses through the school of hard knocks, one starts to think, this surrendering business is tough. Maybe I should just ease my foot off the throttle a little bit. Huh? Take the foot off the mushroom. So just too much surrender is not good. I try to surrender and all that happens is I get smashed. Because that's not a symptom of humility. Right? So it's a challenge. But for one who sincerely, and sincerity is a significant proportion of intent, being sincere, by following the process, by actually following the process, then this attachment and effect of the material energy decreases. It's removed so that one can see through the illusions. So fear no longer becomes prominent. Lust, anger, hope, you know, trust in things material, these things are reduced, and faith and trust and dependence upon Krishna increases and increases and increases. That's achieved by the, you know, following the surrendering process. And then one's able to see the shadows and the echoes and the mirages and the reflections just as for what they are. Distractions. They're not real. For those in material existence, they're very real and they're a cause of great fear. So that, you know, at the end, at the time of death, then, you know, they... There was a story that Subhangi told about how her father passed away. And in his final days, he was crying and really disturbed. And he was always in fear that somebody was coming to get him. Until his daughter then brought garlands and Ganga water and other devotional paraphernalia, and then they went away. But for the materialistic persons, you know, time of death is a fearful experience because of the unknown. But for a devotee, it's not. Protected by Krishna. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Quickly, yes, Michael. Well, that's a very interesting question. Two interesting questions. The first one is certainly true. The second one, when we were in Adelaide on Tuesday, we was singing the Sharanagati prayers, and I asked all of the devotees there, why does this happen, that devotees fall away? So the answers were Maya, illusion. The illusory energy is very powerful, and she has two potencies. She has the Avarnatmika Shakti and the Pratyekpatmika Shakti. So she has the covering potency, which keeps most people in Maya. Right? But she also has, for the devotees, a pulling down potency, testing potency. Right? So there's illusion. And for the devotees, this illusion that I'm more advanced than I am. That I really am, you know, I'm actually not going to be affected by the material energy. And Prabhupada did make the comment about his Western disciples that they're not scared of Maya enough, right? Not scared of Maya enough. And one of the other devotees came up with an interesting observation. He said, "Aparad, offences." We commit offences due to being a little proud or thinking I'm now very advanced, and then we may commit seva aparad, offences in worshipping the deity, which accumulate, or because generally they're not such a problem, but it can happen. And
offences in, especially Vaishnava Aparad, offences to the devotees. That's very dangerous. That's called a mad elephant offence, which can destroy one's devotional creeper. And offences also to the holy name, you know, offences in the practice of our sadhana. So when we commit offences, then we weaken our resolve and our ability, and then that makes Maya's job a little easier. Yes, but Krishna is always there for the devotees. So, you know, just like the shadow moves according to the movement of the hand, so sometimes things are arranged by Krishna to teach us a lesson through the material, you know. So we're under the influence of the Maha Maya, we're under the influence of the material energy, but when a devotee follows the process and takes initiation, then actually there's no longer under Krishna's, sorry, no longer under, directly under the Mahamaya, but actually the arrangements for the purification of the devotee, they're under the direction of Krishna. So sometimes the devotee may be pulled away from Krishna consciousness, but still they're actually being looked after by Krishna for their purification. Yeah, Prabhupada mentions that, and it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Quite possible. Yeah, ultimately Krishna arranges everything.
Well, he does, according to our desire.
Yeah, so, but he's working with you. Okay, come here. Huh? Is this what you want?
Right.
This is, you know, this is not good for you.
And then how do you correct her? How do you get back once you fall? How do you make sort of up that
ground? Follow the process of surrender. The six items of surrender. Check back with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. That's why, you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, Rupa Raghunatha Pade, what is it? Hoyabeya Kutna. I can't remember, but often at the end of each of the chapters of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he offers his respects to the Goswamis, specifically Rupa and Raghunath. So, you know, we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we offer our prayers. You know, Prabhupada says we're Rupa Nugas, we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So we offer our prayers to the six Goswamis and specifically Rupa Goswami, and we look at his instructions. And then we follow those instructions because Rupa Goswami really has given us in the Bhakti. That's why the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is such an important literature. The Nectar of Devotion is such an important literature. Why Prabhupada said it's the law book for ISKCON. Because if you know, if we've fallen or had some difficulty and we wonder why, then if we read those that literature, then we'll find the key is there. And, you know, those six items of surrender encapsulate pretty much everything. So, we need to cultivate humility. We need to cultivate a mood of self-surrender. So that means, you know, Krishna, from now on, I am yours. Huh? So we may have to do that, you know, a few times a day. To remind ourselves, you know, turn the mind around and remember, hang on, we're a servant of Krishna. Oh yeah, that's right, I'm a servant of Krishna. Serving, and I'm here, I'm in the enjoyer. And you guys all do what I tell you to do, okay? I'm the empowered representative of Krishna around here, so you do what I tell you to do. And be dependent upon Krishna. Krishna will maintain me. Krishna is my protector. And then accept that which is favourable and reject that which is unfavourable. So how to do that? Rupa Goswami gives us all of the bits and pieces. 64 items, basically. And then even in the 64 items, there's more, you know, it's more unwrapped or fluffed up like cotton wool. You know, you get the cotton wool. We've got the cotton wool. We haven't got any cotton wool here now. And then you can fluff it out and fluff it out and fluff it out. So we get the basic instructions in the 6 items of devotion, of surrender, but packed within them are all of the details. So that's why we go to Rupa Goswami, we go to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we can go to Narottam Das, we can go to the previous Acharyas, we go to Krishna Das Kaviraj. He explains a lot of these things by giving instructions. Okay, we should finish here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.